Dexter ill, 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 ill today?
Mr. Kirk, Dexter's in school.
I'm afraid he's not, Miss Fishmore. Dexter's truancy problem is way out of hand. The Baltimore County School Board have decided to expel Dexter from the entire public...
High culture meets high technology at the bleeding edge of the radical right. Majority Rights Radio.
Hello, Roy Armstrong. Welcome to Majority Rights Radio.
Yes, welcome from Germany.
Yes. Now, you've led a fascinating life, and we'll get more into your personal history and circumstances and all the fascinating questions that arise with regard to that in the second half of the interview. But first, I want to cover the topic for which I contacted you. A few weeks ago, there were demonstrations against the G8 meeting in Europe, mostly from the left, but also the NPD in Germany, a right-wing nationalist political party.
That's correct. They had scheduled a meeting in Schwerin, a demonstration.
Right, and they weren't able to get permission to do that legally, and so they had disseminated demonstrations all over Germany, I think 12 cities. And
correct.
I thought this was... I saw some of the footage from this. I saw the nationalists marching through the Brandenburg Gate. I saw pictures of nationalists on the steps of the Reichstag. And I thought to myself, that's really impressive. 12 disseminated demonstrations with 50 to 100 participants all across Germany. They tweaked the noses of the authorities. They have very well-looking printed banners. This is more organization than we've seen in the United States for, you know, for certainly decades. And that's very impressive. I should interview someone, you know, high in the NPD as soon as possible. And the first person I could contact actually was you, and you are in Germany. But I'm in touch with
some of the people that are in the leadership positions of the NPD and also on local levels.
Right. I actually don't know and don't have any interest in finding out what your exact connection with the NPD is, but I know that you have access to sources high in the NPD, and you can answer the questions that I have about it. And particularly, I think the listeners at Majority Rights are interested in hearing about the organization of the NPD. How did it start? What were its strategies in different parts of country, the former East Germany and West Germany? What relationship the NPD has to this idea of Kameradschaften, and specifically your organizational techniques?
Well, the NPD originally was founded in 1964, and it was...
That's the year I was born.
Yeah, and that it was basically a number of conservative people and also an established party called the Deutsche Reichspartei, the German Reich Party. And a number of other smaller groups came in. Prior to that, there was the Socialist Reich Party. General Reimer had been active with this, and it was banned by the government, I think, the same year that they banned the German Communist Party, the KPD. However, the German Communist Party was allowed to reorganize and establish itself under a different name shortly after that. And the party was pretty much nationalistic and conservative to begin with, but I think over the years it's changed its appeal to be more populistic and against the current government policies,
right,
which are globalism and plutocratic capitalism, finance capitalism.
Right.
The present government policies. And this is why they also organized the anti-G8 demonstration in Schwerin, which was the government banned because they said they didn't have enough police force to cover that too, and the Heiligen Damm demonstrations.
Did the government ban the left-wing demonstrations?
Well, they obviously had enough police to cover that. But you see, if you don't have thousands of people and can just overwhelm them, then you just don't get your legitimate rights in Germany. It's pretty much a police state here, and it's very arbitrary. They do whatever they want to. The judicial system is not separated like it is in the United States. It's mostly just political lackeys, and they don't have a jury system.
But the left-wing anti-G8 demonstrators were officially tolerated or even encouraged, isn't that true?
Yeah, but they didn't encourage the Autonome, the so-called Black Bloc, which always causes violence. Of course,
these are the people that cause the Autonome or black bloc, that's equivalent to the people
anarchists.
That caused the problems in the Seattle, when was that, 99? You know, there was a Seattle G8 meeting.
Yeah, I know. That was a while back.
Right, but that was the same. They're the people that, like,
I don't know if these people have if the German black bloc has connections with anarchists around the world, but, I mean, it's generally the same type of people. I think a lot of them just want to get attention, and it's kind of like a sport for them to throw bricks at the police and so on.
Now, this is probably the right time to bring this up, although I may infuriate our listeners, but I hope not you. If an anarchist comes to your house, Mr. Armstrong, and you offer him refreshments, you say, would you like a cup of tea, perhaps? He will accept only on condition that it's herbal or non-caffeinated. And do you know why that is?
Maybe they have a sort of ecological orientation.
Well, it's related to that. As an anarchist, he believes that all property is theft.
I see.
Anyway, moving on.
Yeah, the original communist movement had something similar ideas, but eventually, in practical politics, they had to change it.
But anyway, that's what I was interested in, these G8 protests. And so let's, before we get into the whole history and strategy of the NPD, let's just talk about these G8 protests. And let's talk about the Schwerin demonstration, which would have, if it had gone off, it would have included, what, 1,000 or 2,000 demonstrators?
I think they could have got at least 500 up there.
Okay.
Because they had been publishing it in their internet site and their messages to members, and also in their newspaper, the Deutsche Stimme, the German voice.
Okay. So a week or two before the Schwerin protest, it was clear that the courts would not permit it to proceed?
Well, it was an on-and-off thing. Usually you take it to the highest court, and they said they didn't have enough time, the Gerichtshof, Bundesgerichtshof, the
right.
Federal Supreme Court. And they said they didn't have enough time to deal with it, and so...
That was shortly before the rally.
Right. Like sometimes they do issue an injunction in time, and the demonstrations are permitted. But almost every time the party is banned from doing this by the local authorities, and they have to take it to higher courts, whereas the leftist demonstrations, even the counter-demonstrations they organize against the NPD, are permitted almost always. So it's definitely a one-sided system over here.
I'm just trying to get a clear idea of the timing. How many days before the Schwerin demonstration was to take place was it decided to instead have unauthorized, disseminated simultaneous demonstrations?
These so-called spontaneous demonstrations are legal. It's legal. The law says you can do this.
Right.
And so it actually, to be legal, it has to be decided upon on the same day. So,
obviously you're not going to tell me that it was decided on...
Nobody has told me that it wasn't, so I assume that they made these decisions and then set up assembly points. But they may have planned to set up the assembly points in advance so that the thing would function in the event that the Schwerin demonstration was banned at the last minute.
Right.
So that's what they do.
They set up
assembly points, the people meet there, and then go together to the other place.
So what you're saying is, regardless of how much planning it actually took, in order for it to be on the surface legal...
Yeah.
Then it has to at least appear to have been spontaneous.
Right.
Okay. All right. And these were in 12 cities?
I believe so.
What date was that?
I'm not sure of the exact date. It was, I think, on the second, possibly the second day of the conference.
Right. And it took place in 12 cities in Germany, and each of these demonstrations had between 50 and, what, 100, 150?
Possibly, yeah. It's hard to maintain security because most of the official rightist and leftist parties here, if they're considered extremists by the government, they put agents of the Verfassungsschutz, their secret police organization, into these organizations and attempt to sabotage them or at least relay the information to the police very quickly, so... To actually do this, you have to have very reliable people.
Right. Now, I maybe have seen more footage than you have because
that's possible, yeah.
I have broadband, and you're living out in as remote a place as you can get in Germany, I understand.
Yeah, I'm living pretty isolated from a major community.
Right. But I've actually seen footage of the NPD marching through the Brandenburg Gate and down a public street, and little minivans or microbuses of police coming up with their sirens going.
Yeah, I've also participated in some of their marches, some of the larger marches, one of them in Leipzig and in a few other places.
Right. And
in Rostock last year.
They may have been legal, but the police certainly arrested some people.
Well, what they do is usually they try to channel them away from the areas where there are people where they would see these marches, so they put them on the outskirts of the town, let them march around a little bit on the outskirts of the town. That's why these officially registered demonstrations don't have much of an effect, because the police try to cordon them off. At least they do with us. I'm sure they would not do that with the left. They'd give them special privileges.
They march through the Brandenburg Gate.
Mm-hmm.
But do you have any? What stories have you heard about these demonstrations on this day? Like what instances?
Well, I was on the front page of the Bild am Sonntag, the Springer Press, which is pro-Zionist. They attempted to say this was a horrible crime, and the German police were just pushed out of the way. But actually, the police are not allowed to interfere with a spontaneous demonstration.
Right. No, I'm saying, personally, have you heard any stories, incidents from the inside of these demonstrations?
No, I haven't heard of any specific, but they'll probably be mentioned in the next publication of the Deutsche Stimme.
Okay.
There was a recent spontaneous demonstration in a northern German city, and the police were very brutal and arrested Udo Vogt and a number of other people participating, put them in vans and held them for hours.
Okay.
I think it was in Oldenburg.
All right. Well, so let's talk more generally about the NPD then. These demonstrations impressed me because it certainly is more than we can now accomplish or pull off in America or in England.
It's a matter of organization, I would say.
Okay. So
the NPD has about 7,000 people, and it has a lot of younger people who are more mobile than older people and people on pensions or people at don't have limited incomes.
Right. And it is a membership organization. So
yes, it is. Right.
Are members and they pay dues.
That's right. The official dues are €10.50 per month.
Okay. That has advantages and disadvantages. There are certainly, at least here in the States, there are things that are like movements but that don't have membership.
Mm-hmm.
But there are advantages to having members.
Well, I think in America, the anti-immigration movement has gotten frequently up to 1,000 people or more together. I know in South Carolina this was done effectively.
Right. Well, I for Majority Rights Media, I just covered two demonstrations 3 weeks apart down in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you heard of these.
Yeah, I think you and other people have mentioned them to me. I've read about them in some publications.
But they weren't anywhere near that big.
Mm-hmm.
They were, I would say they were comparable in size to these disseminated demonstrations that you had.
Right.
So.
Well, your hardcore activists are always going to be a smaller number, and then they have to mobilize the other people.
Right, and that's the mobilization of those others is what the official policy is designed to suppress.
Yeah.
Right. So the police and the authorities are always trying to hide these people behind barricades somewhere where nobody from the public can see them.
Yeah, and they also harass younger people for the rightist organization. They stop their cars. They do complete search of their cars. They ask them to give their identity and so on. And then they pass this information on to employers. So it's a pretty discriminatory and vicious police state type situation here.
All right. So can you describe the history of your knowledge about the NPD? So like 25, 30 years ago, you...
Yeah, I first got in touch with the NPD in 1969 when I was stationed over here as a U.S. soldier in Gießen. And
during Vietnam?
Right. They sent me to Germany instead of to Vietnam.
Well, that's better.
Yeah, less lead in the air.
Yeah.
And I did get in touch with the NPD, and I tried to organize a TV interview with myself and a couple other soldiers, and the Army found out about it and stopped it, and then they took away my security clearance for this, even though the NPD is a legitimate established Democratic Party. And I refused to talk about my association with it to them, and so they just took away my security clearance and prohibited me from ever becoming a member of the armed forces again after I was released from active service.
They didn't discharge you dishonorably?
No.
Right.
But apparently they didn't like my having contact with them.
Now, this was before Horst Mahler had anything to do with the
NPD. Yeah,
right?
Horst Mahler was involved on the other side at this time. I think he was an attorney for the so-called RAF, left-wing terror organization.
Right. I know, I recently read about that. But he's now a member of the NPD.
He was, but I think he's left the NPD. I'm not sure if he's still a member or if he's just started something on his own.
Is he a personal acquaintance of yours?
Yes, I have met him privately and talked with him.
It's interesting to me.
I think he's a very intelligent man, and I think he's idealistically motivated, and I think he's a supporter of what you would call liberation nationalism.
Right. Well, it interests me that he moved from the extreme left to the extreme right, so-called.
Yeah, well, these terms are arbitrary.
Well, yeah.
The extreme left has Marxist ideology, and much of the extreme right has National Socialistic ideology. But there's other alternatives in between, particularly populism.
Right. Are you familiar with an academic in England, a professor named Roger Griffin?
Mr. Griffin. Griffin.
Nick Griffin is different.
Yeah.
Anyway, Roger Griffin has his field of study is post-World War II fascist movements in Europe.
Yeah, I think I heard that title.
As part of his work, he decided he needed a definition of, what is fascism.
Mm-hmm.
And come up with a small definitional core of what makes something fascism as opposed to maybe not really fascism. And what he came up with was palingenetic ultranationalist populism, where palingenesis just refers to rebirth or, like the phoenix rises from the ashes.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that involves the idea of national rebirth that's ultranationalistic and is populist.
Mm-hmm.
Would be fascist, according to that definitional core.
Yeah, but what does a person mean by ultranationalistic? I mean, to resurrect the nation, there's various things that are required, and I think usually the people that are categorizing something as extreme or fascistic, any even slight tendency in that direction, they will call fascistic, or not neo-Nazi, or anti-Semitic.
So you're saying in order to be condemned, it's enough to say the ultra part?
Yeah, you don't have to be ultra in any way. You just have to start being a pro your own nation, and that's enough. They will immediately attack you as being a fascist or Nazi or extremist, regardless of what you've done. If you've even advocate total pacifism, they will still label you as that. I think if Mother Teresa had been involved in any nationalist movement here, then she would have been labeled a Nazi too. It doesn't matter what you do in the past. If you have any identification with the idea of a nation or some authority on behalf of the leadership of the nation, and you all automatically be called fascistoid or Nazi.
Wait.
That's just how the left works and the system.
I thought Mother Teresa was a Nazi.
I don't know if she was or not, but she did nice things in Calcutta, according to the media.
It's interesting. She's been attacked. Christopher Hitchens famously has totally attacked Mother Teresa, and I wonder about politics and race in regards to that attack, but I don't know enough about that. That's going too far afield. Let's talk about what Mother Teresa reminds me of, which is India, and India reminds me of, and India, I'm thinking of a nice old lady in India and Nazis. I'm thinking Savitri Devi, right?
Right.
So by any chance, did you ever meet Savitri Devi?
I met her in Strasbourg when she was very old and blind, and at a meeting of Thies Christofferson.
Was she nice?
Yeah, she was still very alert for her age. I was too bad she was blind and didn't live much longer.
She was, 90
or something? I think she was getting close to 90 at the time. I know she was over 80.
She was Greek, like Greek and English, right?
Right, and she was married, I think, to a Brahmin.
Right, right. But, she looked Greek, or...
She looked like average white person. I didn't see, she wasn't dark skinned, very light.
And she was blind?
Yeah, at the time she was blind, right.
She went blind late in life?
I think so, yeah. Maybe she had diabetes or something that caused that, I'm not sure.
Now, you say you met her. Did you see her from a distance, or did she?
No, up close. I was talking with her, right, face to face.
And how did she know what you looked like?
Well, she felt me with her, felt my face with her hands. I mean, that's about the only way blind people could actually see or register how somebody else would look.
Well, that's, did you have a feeling of anointing at that moment?
No, I didn't know that much about her until later.
Right. Now, I'm supposed to ask you a question about Miguel Serrano, but I'm hesitant to do that until you tell me who Miguel Serrano is.
Well, Miguel Serrano is a former ambassador of Chile to India.
Okay.
And he wrote a book, I think, also called Hitler, the Ultimate Avatar or Magician.
Okay, so I'm supposed
in
to
Spanish.
Ask Constantine von Hofmeister has given me a question for you. Apparently you met Hitler's butler, and then Miguel Serrano wanted to buy Hitler's nightgown.
Yes, his bathrobe, according to Krause.
What does this have to do with the butler?
Carl Wilhelm Krause was Hitler's first butler. He was replaced by Linge later for an indiscretion. And he lived not too far away from me, and I used to have a photo route in Germany delivering things, and I went right by his house, so I would stop off and talk to him about the good old or bad old days, depending on which viewpoint you have. And so I had his address and was able to contact whenever I wanted. And so Serrano, I guess, heard about that from somebody, and heard also that he still had Hitler's bathrobe. He had replaced... He had to take Hitler's bathrobe wherever he went, and so he thought, well, wouldn't it be nicer if I just got some monogrammed bathrobes and had them put everywhere where Hitler would go? So he kept the old bathrobe and had the new ones put wherever every hotel that Hitler went to. So he still had it, and Mr. Serrano, I think, wanted to use that for some whatever. I think eventually Krause sold it at Sotheby's for 8,000 pounds or something like that.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, he had also a large amount of photographs which Hitler had given him every time that they appeared together. And he loaned them to me, which I photographed and then gave back to him. Eventually, he sold all this material to Heidemann, who was doing this diary thing. It was a fake diary that somebody else had written.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you have an indirect connection to the fake diary.
Well, not Krause did. I mean, I didn't tell Krause to sell it to them. he had personal dedications from von Ribbentrop, the foreign minister, from Hitler, from Sepp Dietrich, and lots of other people, which probably would have been very valuable. I think they had a high personal value to him. They had actually been confiscated by the military authorities, but Krause knew where they had kept them and stole them back and hid them under his mattress. So that's how he was able to maintain them after he was released from Allied custody after the war. He also had a photo montage. You may have seen this, where Hitler's sitting at the table with Eva Braun, and there's a coffee cup in the foreground. This was taken from two separate pictures and glued together as a photo montage, and there was on the back of it there was a stamp saying U.S. Army property. This happened to be with the material that Krause had restolen after they'd taken away from him, and I had sent this to Udo Volendi, and Krause wanted, I think, 300 marks for it, and Volendi wouldn't send her the money, so I asked Volendi to return this montage that the Allies had used, and he did, and then Krause, I think, sold that to England to some person in England who collects these things.
Now, Majority Rights, the blog, there was actually a picture of Hitler that was important in the history, in a minor way, of the Majority Rights blog. With this, let me go back and explain. There was a man who was actually a poster on Majority Rights before I got there, named Jeff Beck, who was an American, and he started out somewhere to the left of Majority Rights when he found it, and then he started writing for it. And during the year he was writing for Majority Rights, he swung all the way through our position over to the right and ended up pretty far to the right of us, and eventually stopped posting for the most part at Majority Rights because of an incident where we generally don't censor the things that our writers post. But in this case, the editor thought that it was too incendiary. Jeff Beck posted apparently a newly discovered picture of photograph of Hitler and Mussolini at the seaside.
Of Hitler and Mussolini at the seaside?
Yeah, in bathing costume.
Was it an original, a genuine photograph?
I believe so. I'm not really sure of the history of it, but in any case, and the thread may have been, the essay, the accompanying text may have been somewhat incendiary. But anyway, the photograph was removed, and he lost his temper and left Majority Rights because of that reason, and is doing good work far to the right of Majority Rights now, has done some good work with other sites in the U.S. But anyway, that involves a Hitler photograph and Majority Rights.
That's interesting. Well, was this actually, whereabouts was this taken?
I don't know. You know, I will, you know, if you wish, we can do another interview with you, and I could find out in the intervening time. I could go back.
Yeah, it would be interesting. I know that Hitler visited Mussolini, I think, in 1938 in Naples.
Now, did Hitler like Mussolini? I've heard hints that Mussolini was not, perhaps not as intelligent as Hitler, or that Hitler didn't really respect him. I'm not sure. This is just a feeling I get.
No, I think Hitler did respect him very much and admired his abilities and his original organization of Italy and coming to power in the 20s. I think he emulated him in this so-called...
Right, because Mussolini rose to power first.
That's correct, in 1922, his march on Rome. And I think Hitler tried to emulate this in 1923, which didn't work out very well for him.
Did Mussolini help Hitler, you know, through the 20s?
I think Mussolini did not help Hitler until much later, after Hitler had helped Mussolini with getting around the League of Nations boycott after Italy had invaded Ethiopia. After that, then Italy was much more friendly to Germany, and they also both combined their forces to help Franco in the Spanish Civil War.
I'm ashamed to say that most of my idea about what happened in the 20s in Italy comes from reading the prison notebooks of Antonio Gramsci, which, by the way, are not nearly as interesting as the few quotes that people usually take from them seem to indicate.
Well, I think Hitler resented, though, that Mussolini did things without consulting Hitler, like invading Greece and some other actions. And this may have caused strategic delays to Barbarossa and required German troops to be stationed in Greece and so on. And I think that that had an effect on the war. I think if Italy and Germany had been more coordinated with their military activities, things would have turned out differently.
Well, this is very interesting. Shall we perhaps move to what I had planned as a second half of the interview?
Yeah, get back to the NPD.
We get back to the NPD. And then I did want to ask you more about your personal life, or we can and personal history, but we could certainly cover that in a follow-up interview.
Okay.
There's no reason to, you know, we can. We're at about almost 30 minutes now, so we could leave it at 40 to 45 minutes if you like.
No, whatever you like. Yeah, you're the boss.
What? Oh, no. I am the interview.
Oh, okay, the interview.
I serve. I am a servant.
Okay.
The listeners, and I serve you, okay?
That's good.
I have a role of neutrality.
Okay.
Okay, I worship only at the feet of the lady goddess Media, whose scales are always perfectly balanced.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's good.
That, by the way, is a joke, if you know anything about Media.
Well, snakes have scales, too, I hear.
No, that's good. Right, the scales of justice.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, that's good. Oh.
Well, let's move on then.
Okay, so, yeah, talk about the NPD.
Well, we have set up our local candidates here, and to do that in Germany, if you have not received more than 5% at the last election, unless it's a communal election, then you have to gather signatures.
I thought the NPD got like 7%.
No, the NPD got in the last general election to the Bundestag, they got 1.6%. They have in local provinces, they have got 7 to 9% in Saxony and in Mecklenburg-Vorpommern. That was the last election where they got representation. Udo Pastor's.
So nowhere near like what Le Pen has gotten in France, or
no, but the when the Republicaner Party was originally founded by Schönhuber, he was getting very large percentages too, also in Baden-Württemberg and Bavaria. And
would you say that the NPD's popularity or electoral success is comparable to that of the BNP in England?
Well, I think the BNP has also got some pretty high percentages in local elections. It depends on the personality of the person that's actually being a candidate.
Right.
If people are known.
Right, I think higher than 9%. But then the BNP has kind of sold out the nationalist cause in some way, or at least.
Well, maybe they've watered it down for strategic reasons. I'm not sure what Griffin's policy is here. I haven't talked to him in private about it, so.
Right.
Maybe I will someday.
Has the NPD watered down too, you think?
No, I don't think. I think they've maintained their stand pretty much. I think if any.
So you have to go out every time you want to stand the NPD in a local election, you have to go out and get signatures that time.
Yeah, that's true. You have to get a certain number of signatures for running a direct candidate. You have fractional representation in Germany, which means if a party gets a certain percentage of the vote, then a certain percentage of the delegates on the list of the party will be in the parliament, whether that's provincial parliament or the national parliament, which is the Bundestag. And you also have a district parliament. My wife is a member of the local district parliament. She was originally with the Republikaner Party, and then we started a new group called the Bürgerbündnis, or Citizens Alliance, and we were massively attacked in the media as being.
Was this before or after your wife lost?
This was before, and because of this, she lost her job because they claimed that two of the members had been skinheads, and one of the members had a minor conviction of some kind, and they said that the party should have been banned because a few of the candidates had history, but most of the candidates did not have any such history like that. My wife was a school teacher. Their other members were firemen and average run-of-the-mill people, and just wanted a change of government here and opposed the present globalistic and discriminatory policies of the government.
Are you in the former East Germany?
No, we don't live in former East. We live in the province of Hessen.
Okay.
And Hessen has been extremely left-wing for a long time. The SPD runs, and the SPD is a Marxist party, and they try to put in their people in all positions, and they have them in quite a few different administrative positions, and particularly in the school system. So the media here cooperated with the Verfassungsschutz, the secret police organization, and they went to my wife's place of work and started filming, and the principal of the school said that they wanted to talk to my wife, of course, and then they used that as a pretext to immediately throw her out of her job. And we took them to court and won, but even after that, then they sent a circular around to all schools in Hessen that if my wife tried to become hired again, even if they had rehabilitated her by law, that they were to report this and not to hire her. So we're going to have to take them to court again.
Hmm.
But it's unlawful to do this under German law and also under European Union law. And Orthodox communists have taken this to court and eventually won. The only problem is it takes years to do that, to go through the various levels of the court.
When you win, do you get compensation for the fact that you've been deprived of livelihood for all those
years? Oh, yeah, they would. I think Sylvia Gingold of the German Communist Party received the equivalent of a couple hundred thousand dollars for it. And other people have even received more recently.
Hmm.
So they know they're going to lose eventually if it goes to court, since we've got it right on black and white that they've discriminated against her and advocated that she not be given work. I mean, she's not a member of any extremist organization. She's never made any extremist political comments, and The Republican counterparty was only a mild rightist party. It was not a hardcore group at all. But of course, since he's married to me, she might be getting punished extra because of that.
Oh, I can't imagine the Marxist leftists and the the agents of the present Judaized cultural imperium would do such a horrible thing. That would be unethical.
Well, they have apparently different standards of ethics.
Hmm.
Like Barbara Streisand, she said that people should develop different standards of beauty to apply to her.
Well, she would, wouldn't
she? I guess she would, yeah. Everything has its reasons.
Did you see Barbara Streisand in... I recently saw, like, within the last year on television, I saw A Star is Born with Kris Kristofferson.
Mm-hmm. No, I haven't, but I've seen recent pictures of her in the newspaper. She doesn't look too much different. Just a little bit older.
Unfortunately.
No.
Yeah. She actually said that people should develop different standards of beauty so that she would do better in them.
I suppose, yeah. That must have been one of her reasoning.
Isn't that sort of...
I think somebody asked her why she never got a nose job. I think she made that statement. So...
Wow. Do you know Norman Lowell?
I received an email from him the other day, and I sent him one back, but I haven't progressed from there. But I know he's doing fairly well in Malta, and Malta has a very bad immigration problem.
Yeah, he has an idea about the EU Parliament.
Mm-hmm.
Has the NPD thought of running candidates for the European
Parliament? I think they have. I think they did. In fact, I think they even were reimbursed for getting a certain percentage of the vote. I think the Republican did, too, and one of their members was Harald Neubauer, and he got into the European Parliament. In fact, we were together at a meeting, was sponsored, I think, by the NPD in Wolversheim, and the local authorities refused to give the hall, which the NPD had needed, so we set up an alternative hall, but unfortunately the leftists got there before the police and started attacking us and threw these big flower containers through the windows of the restaurants and started puncturing the tires of people and damaging the cars that we had used, and they tried to get into the meeting to probably attack Harald Neubauer, and so we just held the door shut so they couldn't get in. And then the police showed up, and it resolved peacefully after that.
Are you familiar with Norman Lowell's idea of Imperium Europa?
I saw that mentioned, but I haven't gone and looked into any detail on it yet.
He thinks that if he can get elected from Malta as an EU parliament representative, mm-hmm. that he can somehow unify the nationalist, all the far-right nationalists who managed to make it to the EU parliament.
Well, they just formed a block. They just formed a block in the EU.
I think three
rightist parties from Italy, Belgium, and France.
And by 2012, to actually establish the Imperium Europa, European Empire.
That's very optimistic. He's being charged with something right now also, I believe, in Malta. All the Western European countries have established various laws to suppress any criticism of immigration or foreigners. In Germany, it's called public incitement or Volksverhetzung.
Sometimes I wonder, even though I have been... not extremely outspoken. I mostly interview people. But I wonder how lucky I would be if I tried to, say, get a visa to come to Germany. I think perhaps it might be difficult.
You don't have to have a visa. You can stay over here for 6 months without a visa. People are declared persona non grata, but I think a person would have to be almost a VIP and be very, very well known to run into any trouble. I mean, David Duke has visited me occasionally, and he's had no trouble coming into Germany.
Who?
David Duke.
Okay. Well, I guess I would have no problem then. Because
I don't think you have the profile he does, the high profile image. So that might be something that would cause them to try to keep somebody out. But I mean, they've been.
No, if they didn't keep Duke out,
I don't think they would either. Unless you're organizing a big meeting of some kind, then they might.
I sometimes wonder about Constantine. because, and you know Constantine von Hofmeister.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, you lived in Louisiana at the same time that he lived in New Orleans.
Yes,
so
we used
to see each other
frequently, meet and talk about things.
But sometimes I wonder about him and his native land, Germany. That is to say, how close he comes to saying things which would get him in trouble in his native country.
Well, it has to be said publicly, and if you say it from outside the country, it's not likely that's going to cause any problems.
Oh, really?
No.
Really? Okay.
I think my interview with you right now would be considered having taken place in the United States, because I'm telephoning you on the other end, and I would not be subject to arrest over here.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, fascinating. Is there anything, given that that's true, is there anything you would like to say?
Well, possibly, but
Germany?
I don't think I want to make any statements that could be construed as public incitement or anything.
All right. Well, let's do this then.
I made a statement in a leaflet once in German, das Motto soll sein, lasst keine Parasiten rein. Do not allow parasites to enter your country. And they construed this as my saying that all people who were non-European were parasites, which was not what the leaflet said at all. But they convicted me in absentia of this Volksverhetzung law while I was actually in America. But they forgot to send the invitation to me, so my attorney, Jürgen Rieger, who's one of the most active and respected attorneys in Germany, also defended Ernst Sindel. He was able to get the case thrown out and put back into the previous instance, and they just dropped the charges after that.
Mr. Armstrong,
yes.
I would really appreciate it if you would do an experiment with me now, which is think back upon that pamphlet and that parasite slogan.
Yes.
And I want you to... Without saying anything, I want you to think in your mind, hold a very clear image, verbal, auditory image,
mm-hmm.
of exactly who you thought you meant by the word parasite. And I'm going to think the same thing at the same time, but we're not going to say anything.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I know who I meant.
All right, wait. Just
actually, the leaflet was not directly composed by me. I just was held responsible
right.
for it because my name was on there.
All right, that was a wonderful moment. I am certainly glad I didn't say that out loud.
Yeah, they have some dislike of the term parasite that seems to generate a lot of emotional feeling by against certain people, and I suppose that's why they don't like that term.
On a completely unrelated note,
mm-hmm.
have you ever read Kevin MacDonald?
I know who he is, and I've seen his works, but I don't have a copy myself. But I know what he writes about.
Yeah. That was one. Isn't it amazing what we can do with radio?
Yeah, it is an interesting medium. Too bad most people like to prefer the boob tube. And
well, this is why, right? It's in deference to, you know, people's.
But it's hard to watch television when you're sitting in a car, people, unless you're in the back seat.
Right. Well, it's in deference to basically the preferences of the great mass,
mm-hmm.
that majority rights media is actually being created. This is majority rights
mm-hmm.
radio, but we have started the Majority Rights Media Project.
In terms of majority rights, it's also interesting to note that almost all the positions of the NPD, the public agrees with almost all of them completely if they're divorced from the name NPD. That when they're put in a package
right.
under the NPD, then for some reason the media is able to generate enough fear that the people won't vote for the NPD. They continue to vote for the parties which don't support majority rights, which continue to bring in thousands and thousands of aliens into this country.
What I was trying to get at in my clumsy way is we are moving into video.
Oh, that's excellent.
Yeah, we are. And, you know, if you had broadband, I would direct you to some
mm-hmm.
stuff you can watch. But... we actually at Majority Rights think that video is, you know, going to be an important part. And not just YouTube, these grainy, compressed videos, but, I mean, glorious, high-definition, full-screen, eventually even HD
mm-hmm.
resolution, like glorious full-screen video.
Mm. Well, that's nice. Maybe I'll get a larger computer screen then.
Well, no, without...
My sons are more active into this. My oldest son
is
majoring in electronic engineering, so...
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's more into it than I am. Maybe he can
right.
set that up eventually.
Well, we're over the 44-minute mark, and I don't think we have not even talked about, you know, your history. You grew up in Seattle,
that's correct, for instance.
Which is interesting.
I went to the University of Washington for 3 years and was on active duty with the Army for 2 years. I was also in Naval ROTC for 2 years at the university.
Did you graduate?
No, I didn't. I lost my scholarship from the NROTC, and the situation is...
No, I mean, did you ever graduate?
Not from college, no.
In other words,
I have about completed approximately 3 years when you consider the number of credits. I'm trying to continue it now, but the government has been blocking my attempts to get a loan, so... Maybe it'll be successful.
I see you. In other words,
someday.
Because of the terms of your separation from the military, they didn't.
No. I had the GI Bill, but I used it for some other things, and it expires after so many years, and so it expired before I could use it to finish college.
But you were also involved in the 1980s in some political events in Central or South America. Let's save that for another interview.
Yeah, we can talk about that later.
Just tease our listeners. Tell them briefly.
Well, basically, there was a very unpopular dictator in the country of Suriname, and a lot of people that didn't like his government lived in Holland, and they wanted to do something about it. And so they asked various people, including me, to help organize an insurgency. And I did what they asked me to, but the insurgency was crushed in December of 1986 by the forces of the dictator attacking with helicopter gunships and so on. I had asked the Central Intelligence Agency to give a certain amount of material, which this resistance movement had asked for, and they didn't even answer. So...
The U.S. wasn't back.
No. The U.S. had an agreement that Alcoa Aluminum Company would be allowed to take as much of the bauxite from the rivers of Suriname. So they were obviously dealing with the dictator. So apparently they were satisfied with the status quo, and the fact that he was oppressing people and murdering people and so on didn't seem to bother them.
Because, in other words, of the tacit U.S. and capitalist assistance to Alcoa, you would say that the insurgents found themselves boxed in.
Right, they had only about 300 active members, and they were receiving assistance from the local Bush Negro villages, and also the dictator attacked them with helicopter gunships, forcing more than 5,000 people to flee into the neighboring country. French Guiana, and a lot of these people then appealed to Holland to let them in. So it kind of created more immigration.
Mr. Armstrong, I hope that you will come back and talk to us again, and I predict that the listeners at Majority Rights are going to want to hear from you again.
Yeah, well, we can discuss some of these things in greater detail then. And you like the address of the NPD?
Yes, why don't you tell our listeners?
Okay, if they want to contact the party headquarters, they can do that by contacting P.O. Box 840157 in 12531 Berlin, Germany. And they can direct that to either the NPD or to Mr. Klaus Beier, B-E-I-E-R. In our local activities in Northern Hessen, you can go to the internet site, www.npd-nordhessen, nordhessen.de. The NPD also has its own website, but I think it would be better to do a Google search under National Democratic Party of Germany rather than or Nationaldemokratische Partei Deutschland, because there are other, I think, companies which use the letters NPD.
Thank you very much, Mr.
Armstrong. Yeah, thank you. I hope to be getting back with you again soon.